Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today we're going to be talking all things crypto with our guest, John Wingate, who is from Bank Social. So, John, it's the first time we've got you on the podcast, hopefully the first of a few to come. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, very good. Thank you, John. And where are you calling from?
Calling from Dallas, Texas, here in the US.
Dallas, Texas. Okay. Well, I've got me in The Hague, Netherlands, and Kenny.
Yep, I'm in wet and miserable Scotland, which is, we're back to the norm now. It was blissfully sunny for 2 or 3 weeks, but now we're back to the normal Scottish weather. But no, it's great to have you on, John, and it's I've never actually been to the States. It's a place I would love to go to, so it's on my wish list.
We'll have to get you over here.
Yeah. We're actually starting to talk to a lot of people in the States now, just with, you know, some of the investments we've made and et cetera. But the Zoom has certainly made the world a lot smaller. So it's great to have you on, and hopefully we can educate ourselves and our listeners about the world of crypto, because it seems to be evolving every single day. It's just gathering pace.
Isn't it crazy how fast it evolves?
Yeah, it's mad. Absolute mad. But before we go into that, John, maybe you could just introduce yourself, maybe just give us a wee sort of potted history of John Wingate, you know, in 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I won't go too deep into, you know, who I am since I was born, but I'll talk about it from a perspective of how I got into crypto. How about that? So my background is in technology, building retail-based financial solution software, high volume, high scale, high security need, as well as omni-channel e-commerce products that you know, like ship from store. So all that's where I started. That's where I guess honed my chops on technology, but, you know, technology since I was a kid. And then in 2010, mid-2010, early 2010, one of my developers came to me at lunch and said, "Hey, John, I know you're into technology. You should check out this thing called Bitcoin." And I went home and it instantly caught my eye. So started, you know, doing everything you could think. My first Bitcoin transaction was a dark web transaction, not for anything illicit, just to get some, just that's the only place you could find it in 2010, really, if you weren't mining it. And so, got on the dark web. I went to Western Union, sent a guy like $35, and he sent me a ton. I'm not even going to say how many Bitcoins he sent me, but it was more than enough to have quit doing anything I ever wanted to do for the rest of my life. But those are gone. I you know, foolishly spent them. Either way, you know, played with Bitcoin for about 2.5 years, everything from mining and just playing around with it, and got a few friends interested in it. I was a real big proponent early on, and then, you know, started just kind of losing interest from the perspective of, you know, it was the early days. It stalled out. I still love the technology, but I kind of got away from it. Heard too many people telling me it's not the future, so kind of stepped back from it. And then Ethereum came on the scene, 2015, 2016, extremely excited about Ethereum and smart contracts, started playing with those, learning the language, you know, writing some tokens, writing some Solidity, and then watched the crash of 17, 18, and 19, and was really, you know, on the sidelines waiting for a moment of entry and a place to enter. And then my mom called me. She was on a chat I was having the other day, and she was laughing, but she called me and said, "Hey, I'm about to, this is about 6 months ago." She said, "I'm about to buy my first Dogecoin." And when I heard that, my mind immediately went to, okay, the masses are ready to accept crypto as, you know, some form of a piece of their life, whether they're fully entrusting it with every financial transaction they'll ever complete from here on out. I don't think we're right there yet, but that's what did it. It was my mom doing that. And very quickly after that, I'd been, you know, I've always been in the markets. I never really left them, but that was the point at which I said, okay, it's time for me to bring my experience in business as an entrepreneur, my love for the technology, my passion rather for the technology, and, you know, everything that I just can bring to the table. Let's see what I can do. I very quickly, within a couple of weeks, came up with the idea for Bank Social. We put the project together. We launched the project. And as they say, the rest is history. Here we are.
Wow. Well, 2010, yeah, that's early adoption, that is. That's I think you're probably the only person we've spoken to that has bought that early into Bitcoin. That in 2010, I just finished university and I was going to my first job, and yeah, never heard of it. And not for years afterwards either, probably.
Yeah, well, I can actually, in a previous life, John, I was a bit of a gambler. I actually made a living out of it, and at one point, the casinos were offering to pay out in Bitcoin. Again, this would be around 2010, 2011. And I looked at it and I said, this is absolute nonsense. I'm not taking Bitcoin. And I wish I had. But yeah. Because nobody knew then. You know, it was like, I'm going to say there were 30, 40 cents or something. I can't honestly remember. But it certainly would have been life-changing. But there's probably thousands of people worldwide are in the similar position, you know, that were offered Bitcoin for something and they never took it. But it's just amazing where it's at just now, and it's bubbling away at the moment. You know, had that dropped down to about $29,000, and here we are back over 50 in a flash.
In a flash. That's a great way to put that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just scary how quickly it moves. It's astonishing.
Very quick.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty new to the sort of crypto world. I'm saying pretty new. It's like 18 months. But the first thing that struck me was it's quite hard to get into. You know, I mean, from our side of things in the UK, it's exceptionally hard to actually get fiat money into a crypto wallet. There seems to be so many barriers up against the banks and different types of cards. I think that's put a lot of people off in the UK. I think the States and certainly some of the Asian countries, they seem to be miles ahead in the adoption and the ease of transaction. I think that's what the biggest barrier in the UK is at the moment, is the entry into crypto. It's difficult. So it is. The governments are putting up a good fight and trying to block everything that seems to come along. I mean, there's one, I call it the magic bullet. Sometimes for me to get Ethereum into MetaMask, I've got to deposit into sort of Revolut. I don't know if you've heard of Revolut. It might be just a UK European based bank. You know, send it to sort of Binance or Coinbase, and then send it over to my MetaMask account. You know, it's like that JFK magic bullet. You know, it's bounced off different payment providers, and then you get hit with fees all the way along. So unless you're putting in a decent amount, it's hardly worth the effort sometimes. So that's a big barrier over here in the UK. I don't know what it's like in the States, John.
That's a worldwide barrier. And that's really the, not that I'm here plugging Bank Social, but that's really the goal. You mentioned two important things there. Both the barrier to entry for onboarding your fiat and offboarding your fiat, really, for that matter. But as far as an ease of use, you just named one of the major reasons why people are having a hard time, is because even if they have the $1,000 to put in and they're fine with losing $100 or $50 and doing that, the barrier to saying, okay, I want to get token X, right? And token X is not a real token. It's just a, you know, made up token. They want to get that token. And now they've got to jump through, you know, let's be literal here, not go crazy, but five steps, six steps, at least minimum, by the time you've, you know, onboarded into an exchange or something centralized, and then you offboard it into a decentralized wallet, and then you connect it to whatever, you know, decentralized exchange you're going to use. So that's really one of the goals that I think the whole world needs to, or the crypto world, the people who are the builders in the crypto world, is both ease. Right now, everybody's trying to take a little piece. You know, it's so decentralized that everybody's trying to take a little piece at every, you know, at every juncture. And yeah, we've got to get away from that. And we really have to start to create, backbones that other protocols can build on that make it easy for the user to get in and out, but also make it easy for the other systems to integrate with. Right now, the way the integrations happen, you really have to be a blockchain expert to be able to tie it, like, you know, to write a smart contract, even though it's not very hard. You've got to know how to code, and you just can't be a group of technology guys that have been doing it for 20 years and just get into it. The one thing that I would say that it's probably not in my viewpoint after, you know, studying this for the last 3-4 months, the regulatory challenge is not that big of a burden right now. There are several countries that have fully adopted the regulatory openness and practice of accepting crypto, you know, places like Singapore, places like, I mean, we're talking major financial hubs like Switzerland, you know, and the other thing is that you look at some place like the UK, and I'm surprised that it's not, there's not more adoption in the UK, because in the UK, you have a willingness and an openness to be a sandbox for these types of things. They're not as hard as the US when you talk about these tokens coming in and then them clamping down on them extremely hard. You don't see that in the UK. There's a little bit more of a willingness to be flexible in the UK. And so I think that really the challenge comes into everybody, you know, the other two items we just talked about, everybody trying to take a little piece at every transaction. And then the onboarding of the user is just connecting the wallets and trusting that the address you put in. I mean, I know specifically for my mom, when I look at how to build software, you know, I try to build it for people who are everyday users, your mass users, especially financial tool. You're going to have a lot of users using these types of financial tools. So it has to be simple. And you're right. You can't be hit with a ding every single time you move this stuff around. Big dings. You know, it's fine. A penny here, penny here. Nobody's going to care about that. But $50, $100 on $1,000, that's just too big.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. It's quite interesting you were talking about, you know, countries of, you know, mainstream adoption. And obviously, podcast today is quite timely because El Salvador, Mark, yeah. I think you were reading about this earlier on.
Yeah, El Salvador just today, haven't they? They've gone live effectively with adopting Bitcoin as legal tender. So that means that any retailer is obliged to actually accept Bitcoin as a means of transaction. So yeah, there was some pictures going up of like almost little street vendors with little carts with a sign saying, yeah, you know, we accept Bitcoin, aceptados Bitcoin, I think it said something like that. So yeah, I mean, it's quite a milestone day, really, isn't it? A country's actually adopting it there as their legal tender.
$20.5 million to the tune of $20.5 million, 400 tokens they bought at today's price of roughly 50,000. Wow. That's crazy.
And then you look at today and you look at what the market's doing. And Bitcoin's down 5, Ether's down 7. All the alts look like they're coming down, basically mimicking it. So yeah. It's interesting. I wonder, do you have an opinion on why we're in the red today, John?
You know, I do think that there are power. You know, the hard part about being in crypto right now is the market caps are manipulatable. Let's say that. And so, because they're so small, I could definitely see, like, the IMF came in and told El Salvador about a week ago, "Hey, we thought you weren't going to do this. We thought you weren't going to take it this far. You're making the wrong move." And so you have, like, El Salvador's fighting the IMF, you know, that's a challenge. Right. And so I could definitely see, you know, I'm not going to be a conspiracist here, but I could definitely see how people, you know, outside of the crypto space, especially with other things to lose, aren't really fond of a country, right, just eliminating their ties to standard financial, you know, strongholds and going into something like Bitcoin. So I really think that some of what we're seeing here is market manipulation to scare the markets. I mean, think about how much, if it's down 5-6%, you know, that's a couple million dollars that they just took from El Salvador. Somebody.
Yeah, you know, somebody. So, exactly.
Somebody. Yeah. And yeah, you know, these people getting together can really move. But what are your guys' thoughts on this? I mean, that's more of a conspiracist.
Well, yeah, but on the conspiracy side of things, I do get the feeling that a lot of the moves in crypto are narrative driven. You often see, I think, the headlines coming out on the big news, you know, the big news agencies, CNN in the US, BBC in the UK. You see the big headlines about Bitcoin, you know, breaking new highs and you know, over 60,000 and all this. And then you start seeing celebrities sort of tweeting about it. Elon Musk talking about it, going on Saturday Night Live and talking about it, and then it all sort of just sort of changes, and then that kind of goes quiet, and then you see sort of the fear come into the market and the extreme fear, and then the narrative sort of seems to switch again, and optimism sort of starts to come back. And then again, you start seeing big names. I mean, Reese Witherspoon this week, randomly, completely randomly, put on her Twitter, whether it was her, whether her PR team, said, just bought my first ETH. And you sort of look through her Twitter and you just think, well, it's random. That doesn't make any sense looking at what you normally post on your Twitter page. And then you got Michael Saylor, isn't it? Yeah, he's a big Twitter personality. He, saying today everyone should buy $30 in Bitcoin in solidarity with El Salvador. And you just sort of see these things. And I just think there is a little bit of, I don't know if it's manipulation as such, but I think there's a narrative that that kind of plays out sometimes and then is helped along by certain individuals. But I mean, you kind of also see a little bit, I don't know, as well, Kenny, in the stock market, don't you, where, you know, you kind of have periods of, there's a lot of buzz on activity and it kind of dies away and you start feeling it coming back. But I do feel more with crypto that it you tend to see a lot more sort of obvious, I don't know, kind of narrative steering. That would be my opinion. I don't know what you think, Kenny.
Well, crypto never sleeps as well. That's the thing. You know, it's 24/7, 365 days a year, which took me quite a bit coming from a stock market that closed in a Friday, you know, 4 p.m. and it didn't open up again till Monday morning. All of a sudden, when you take a bit of your portfolio and you dump it into crypto and you're like, shit, this thing never sleeps, you know, and it does take up a hell of your time. You know, I'm obviously involved in a few tokens, so I'm pretty much living it 24/7. And don't get me wrong, I love it because I thrive in things like that. It kind of gives me energy to do other things, whereas other people it probably just drains them. But I seem to, for some reason, it gives me more energy and zest to do other things. But just to go back to the Bitcoin thing, I actually think, you know, that thing where you're saying, you know, encouraging people to buy $30 of Bitcoin, it's almost like I don't have any Bitcoin because it's like two fingers up to the government. If you want to stick it to the government, you buy Bitcoin. I think, I can't remember who said this, you know, stick it to the government, buy Bitcoin. If you want to, you know, invest in technology, buy Ethereum or something similar. Mm. That's the mindset I have. I'm not saying Bitcoin won't make you.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right on with that. The Bitcoin maximalists don't tend to play with any other tokens. They're not about the technology. So I agree 100%, Kenny, with what you're saying. You know, really, I'm for the technology to win. So I'm not somebody who cares about Ethereum. And that's what I said in my intro, is that the reason I got away from Bitcoin is I kind of just, you know, it got stale to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I started seeing things like Ethereum, and they really opened up the world to these new technologies to flourish. And I do think you see, because of the way Bitcoin has this kind of, you know, $1 trillion market cap, and, you see the, like the NFL came in, to your point about just, you see this news, this, you know, what's the intent of the news? The NFL came out with an official statement saying, hey, we're not letting anybody from the NFL participate. And the NFL's big. It's got a lot of players as opposed to something like the NBA. It's a much tighter group of people. The NFL has a bunch of players. And so the networked effect of that is so much broader. And then you think about, sometimes I see, just like in these smaller communities, and I'm sure, Kenny, you've seen this, where people come in and FUD that community just so they can get a lower buy-in price. I think you've seen that with Cardano for the last few days. People have been saying that, oh, the Cardano network's not working. And that FUD works sometimes. It gets, because most people that are in this, they jump in just with the idea of, I'm scared, I'm dipping my toe in, I'm going to put some money in here. And then they see something, they're like, oh my God, you know, I don't want to lose my $1,000. So they jump out of it. And, you know, I think that we have a lot of manipulation happening, good or bad, in the markets right now, especially since they're so small and they can be moved with, you know, $10 billion, $20 billion. And there are people that have this much that are, you know, consolidating. You see moves off of exchanges. I have a bot that I follow that basically will show you every time 100 million or 300 million, you know, big whale wallets that move money around off and on exchanges. It's crazy to see sometimes how these correlate with moves in the market.
Yeah. I think as well, similar in the stock market, there are always winners And there has to be losers. That's how it works. It's like a zero sum, you know, game. So if someone's won, then someone has lost as well. And then you sort of ask yourself, okay, well, who's really got the power here? Is it you as an individual, or is it people who have more clout, have more of a following, have more of a stake, if you like, in a certain crypto? So it is difficult. But I do think we are at a very exciting stage. Someone said to me, it's like the .com era. But you're on the right side of it. Mm-hmm. So if you think, I mean, I wasn't around, but I've heard the stories of my dad used to work for Massey Ferguson, and they were one of the first companies to get a computer that was probably very big and, send an email. And you imagine sort of selling to someone, oh yeah, you can send a digital message to someone. Oh, okay, well, what do I have to do to have that? We need a computer. Okay, it's very expensive. You need internet connection. Okay, not really possible. And it takes a long time. Okay, well, I'll just send it in the post like I normally do. So you have this kind of, because it's new and people don't understand it and it's not that fast at the moment. But of course, we see where the internet's gone, and there was, of course, the dot-com bubble, which then burst. But, the internet didn't go away. The fundamental companies and concepts that were created in that dot-com era are still here today, and we use them all the time. And I think we'll have the same thing in crypto. And Bitcoin, and smart contracts, and NFTs for that matter. But at the moment, as it finds its feet, it's going to be volatile. But equally, it's exciting. You just have to, you have to be careful. You just have to.
It's a wild west.
But isn't it like when you feel euphoric and on top of the when you feel master of the universe, then it's time to get out. And then you should get in when it feels like you're swallowing broken glass. That's something else I was told. And yeah, it's so difficult though to do that, because you see the green, 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 and just naturally you get all excited. You see the red, 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 and you start to panic. But when you're master of the universe, you need to come out, I think. But it's difficult to know where to go, isn't it, as well, I think, and what to pick. And there are so many different ones out there, so many altcoins. But I wonder, there's something that I'd like to ask a question on. Maybe Kenny, you can answer this, or John, I don't know. You mentioned about like Ethereum and that being the technology and the smart contracts. What can you explain what that is then?
Sure. So, sorry, Kenny, you want to take that and I'll follow up on it?
I was just going to do the slippy shoulder and give that one to you, John. So you're the expert.
So... a smart contract, and I'll bring in something. You guys are familiar with King's College over there, so I was lucky enough to have a Dr. Schillig, who's a attorney and professor over at King's College in London, on my show last week, and we touched on this exact topic. But the short version of what a smart contract is a set of parameters that can be codified that anybody can review, including a lawyer like Dr. Schillig or a programmer, to ensure that whatever specific performance you are expecting from that occurs. And so in the traditional model, for you to have adherence to specific performance, you sometimes or a lot of times have to go to a court, right? You do something, the other person doesn't do it. Mm. Now you got to go to court to settle it with smart contracts. While that doesn't eliminate all the need to go to court, I mean, you still have that. A smart contract can't do anything. But it does provide more rigidity and finality, really, to adhering to specific performance. So if X happens, Y happens. And we're just exploring the surface. We're touching the surface with this as these contracts get more complex, smarter, cheaper. Really, right now, the main barrier to getting these things, and I can tell you as somebody who writes these and looks at how to make them more efficient just from a gas cost perspective. I mean, Kenny, we were talking about gas and how crazy it is right now. And so one of the big, concerns with writing any smart contract is, especially on the Ethereum network, is you want to ensure that it's not costing hundreds of dollars to execute a transaction. And that's where complexity comes into play. So right now, we're only touching the surface. I'm hopeful that as Ethereum 2 or even things like Cardano, I have some concerns with Cardano being a functional programming language as opposed to an object-oriented programming language just on complexity. But, as we move to cheaper and cheaper gas, the complexity of these contracts can get greater and greater, and then we have the ability to codify more of it, which is great.
Okay. And Ether really is the cornerstone of smart contracts at the moment.
Yeah. If you look at all these subsequent chains that are coming out, they're forced to use what's called Solidity, the EVM, which is the Ethereum virtual machine. And Solidity is the language. Just think of it like C++ or any coding language. And a lot of these smart contract programs or blockchains that are coming out, even Cardano, which is written in Haskell, they're really being forced, because most of the programmers out there right now, we're not talking about people who've been doing this for 25 years with Solidity. So everybody knows Solidity. They feel comfortable with Solidity. They have tokens written in Solidity. So Solana, really all Terra Chain, Luna, Cardano now, they all have, even Polygon Matic, they all have these EVM bridges so that you can bring your Solidity or even write Solidity on their chain. So it's becoming the language of the blockchain right now.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And obviously, you talk about smart contracts, a lot of them are, these contracts are manifesting themselves in NFTs, which seems to be all the rage at the moment. I mean, I actually think NFTs will be the first entry point for a lot of people like crypto, because it's, you know, a lot of these are, you know, there's a lot of trading games or sort of gamification of NFTs. So I think there'll be a lot of people, their first venture into crypto won't be like ourselves where we've been bottom feeding some of the tokens. It'll actually be purchasing an NFT. Mm. It's definitely the easiest way to get into it.
And they're doing it behind the scenes. So that's when crypto is going to take off to me, when you don't know you need to use it, but you're using it. And if you look at, I think you're right that the NFT is really the first, because if you look at how the NFT can be used, there's a system called Axie Infinity as a really good example. It's a video game and you play it. And then inside the metaverse, what they're calling the metaverse, you can, everything you do, like when you buy a sword or when you buy a car or when you do this or when you win or whatever, that comes in the form of an NFT. So you buy an NFT, now you own that car. You buy a sword and you own that NFT. And it's happening behind the scenes. People don't need to know that they're using NFTs, but at the end of the day, it's like a tradable card. Now I can go out to a marketplace. I can say, I won this sword. Who wants it? It's, you know, if you look at a game like, which I was really into back in the day, World of Warcraft, where, I mean, literally, it's funny. You used to have farms in Asia where you'd pay them $1,000 and they'd go get you this sword, or they'd go do that, or they'd go do this. And it was really because it was the infinite, I mean, the infant stages of stuff like this, like, the, you know, people inherently want this. And so I think this is where it's going to take off. You're right. You put in your Apple Pay, you put in your credit card, and then you don't even have to know. It's just seamless. You're using NFTs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely coming. I mean, I think with one guy on previously for crypto and, we came to the conclusion that maybe your kids, Mark, will never actually walk into a bricks and mortar bank. Everything will be done in their phone, and it'll all be, open source banking. There'll be no need for the Bank of America branch anymore in downtown Dallas, because it'll be done in your phone.
That's what Bank Social is aiming. I mean, that's our aim at Bank Social, is that exact ecosystem.
Yep, and that's what kids nowadays want. You know, it's like sometimes you speak to some of the brokers in the stock market and you say, no, it's really quiet just now, and they don't have that younger generation signing up, because when you try to apply for a broker account, you know, you get six application forms. You know, the KYC to get a broker account in the UK is just, it's pretty damn hard sometimes. So it just puts younger people off, because they're used to opening up a Binance or a Coinbase or a MetaMask wallet, and it's done on your phone. You upload your picture, you take a selfie, KYC is done, and away you go. You know, it's an easy onboarding process, whereas the traditional stocks method is very labor intensive. Yeah. And people, especially youngsters, are just, not doing that.
And is this just where smart contracts really come into play then?
I don't know that the smart contract is directly related to what Kenny was talking about. For me though, he's absolutely right in that the onboarding process, you know, if you look at Robinhood, Robinhood was very successful up until, I mean, it just got an IPO in the United States, and it was successful because the onboarding was just, you know, try Fidelity and then try, or try, you know, Charles Schwab and then try Robinhood, you know? And even now, you know, now that people are understanding, well, how are they letting us get in for free? And, you know, why was it so easy? Well, they actually are buying the worst price stock that you could buy at that time, making the spread and then giving you the, yeah. So, but either way, I mean, it comes down to the person who's running around all day, all over the world with their phone in their hand. Like Kenny said, they want to take a selfie and be done. KYC is done. That's what they're used to. And so these antiquated systems that require you to go into a bank to download, you know, bank statements from 2 years ago, why isn't that in some system that's online? Like, why can't that be? That's what the blockchain is going to do in the future, because they know that to keep all that data, they have to have servers and systems, and they got to maintain them, and they got to securitize them, and all this other, you know, infrastructure that comes along with it, they can't keep up. And so, and I think banks like a Bank of America, to Kenny's point, they're going to have a very difficult time competing with something like a Bank Social that works for the people instead of working to keep a corporate infrastructure in place with 1,000 stores and, you know, thousands of you know, workers. You can really displace a lot of that.
Yeah, but just a good point in that, John, was I opened a new business account with the, and I'll name them to help it. So the Royal Bank of Scotland, and it took me 12 weeks to get the business
account
open. And that was multiple phone calls, just a ridiculous online application process. And don't get me wrong, I mean, it's set up. I love RBS. I've got several business accounts with them, and the once it's set up and running, it's a dream. But that process to, for somebody who's wanting to start a new business and, you know, and it had to wait 12 weeks for a bank account, that could just kill your business right away. So it could, before you even start. So there's definitely lessons to be learned from bricks and mortar banks, from the crypto world, and how to do business and how to look after people. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we don't even have to put crypto into that conversation. We can just say neobanks, because there are some neobanks that aren't crypto banks that are taking, you know, different approaches to onboarding and retaining and, you know, the way people utilize. And I think, you know, just looking at that, the new banks are going to have, when you combine blockchain, you know, it's a whole different game.
Yeah, definitely. But,
we're just talking about Bank for the People and you know, the kind of social, a lot of these altcoins, that's what they've got, haven't they? When I say altcoins, I mean everything except really Bitcoin and Ethereum, really. They have like a movement or in some cases an actual use case behind them. But it's very, how many are there, Kenny? I mean, you know more than me. There's probably, is it 3,000 or something listed on?
There's more than that. I mean, there's probably about 10, 12 new tokens landing
every day.
Coin market cap every day. And that's just the ones that get approved. You know, there's probably 30 or 40 that don't get past the first stage.
But how do you work through the mire?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I've had a rug pull in one of the tokens I invested in, and the lesson I learned from that was, I'm only going to invest in the tokens where I know the people, I know that, you know, that it's trusted, it's transparent, they've been about for a while. Sometimes a new launch for a token's great because you can get a return and you can get your money and you can get out. But sometimes it's actually better to find a token that's been established for 2 months or starting to work through their roadmap. You know, you can speak to the admin, whatever, and you build up that sort of trust relationship, because it is a Wild West out there, and there's some ruthless people out there. And once your money's gone, it's gone, Mark. You know, there's no reporting to the police, because they'll just, it's a wallet, you know. I've got umpteen wallets in MetaMask. You can create a new wallet with the stroke of a, you know, click of the mouse, and I've got a new wallet, and I can call it whatever I want. You know, and it's a dangerous world out there. So I've learned the hard way, and I think it's good. Sometimes you need a good kick in the balls.
So what are you picking then? Are you picking?
And it's obviously, yeah. You know yourself, Mark. There's three tokens I'm involved with, and I've got probably about 95% of my portfolio in them.
Okay.
Purely because I'm involved with them, I kind of know what's going on. And
yeah.
Yeah, and I trust the team. It all comes down to trust, because there's some of the rug pulls that are just going on. John, you'll be able to talk about some of the rug pulls that are, I mean, some of them are spectacular. You know, it's just, and it's not so much that, it's that a lot of the influencers as well are getting paid, you know, a lot of tokens to promote these particular tokens or Ethereum, whatever they're getting paid in, you know, and as soon as it moves, they're just pulling their tokens out, and you know, it crashes back down. So that there is a lot of money to be made, but there's a hell of a lot of money to be lost. So I wouldn't advise anybody just to, you know, stick $10,000 in or whatever and go on a mad spree, because $10,000 can be $1,000 in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
It's,
but all the tokens, though, they have their own, they've all got something behind them, like a point, I suppose, a use case.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of them are still in development, you know. It's, yeah, they've got their roadmap, and I mean, obviously one of the tokens I'm involved with is called Beach, and you know, our aim is to try and get people around the world cleaning beaches and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, well, we're going to do a separate podcast on that in a couple of weeks, hopefully. Mm. But you know, there is some decent tokens out there, and there's some tokens out there that are just purely got their market cap because, you know, somebody like Elon Musk is mentioned in a tweet, and before you know it, in a flash of an eye, it's up at $100 million market cap. And there's nothing really behind it at all. It's really bizarre how some of these tokens have got these overinflated market caps, and there's nothing behind them. But that's the way crypto is.
Yeah, and just to expand upon, so I'll talk quickly about the market caps, because I've seen how some of these tokens can, you know, blow up a market cap with very little liquidity. So there's two components of, if you're looking at tokens, let me go through my 3-point checklist that I go through whenever and what I tell people. Mm-hmm. So first, you're right, a docs team, like a team that you can see, that you can understand, that you can trust. That's important for being in crypto. Even then, it's not a guarantee, because you've seen some people doxed and then they run away with $300 million. The second point is the smart contract. Make sure that thing is, you've got a, you know, an audit from a third party company that's looked at the code, and that ensures that there's no, you know, funny business going on in there. And then the last thing is the utility. Make sure that you believe in the utility in this day and age, like for you to be, you know, you got to be passionate about it so you can follow it, so you can make sure that you're not getting, you know, rugged, or the community's not falling apart or anything like that. So those three things are really important. Coming back to the market caps and these tokens that have these huge market caps, I've seen tokens that have market caps where they're at $1 billion, but they only have $1 million worth of liquidity. And what that means is that if there's somebody that owns 0.5% or 0.1%, and they all of a sudden decide that they want to sell, they've just depleted the entire pool of liquidity in one fell swoop. And so market cap is hardly a good indicator of the you know, value or success of a token. You know, it's really a combination of the amount of liquidity. And by liquidity, I mean, in these decentralized exchange pools, or even these centralized exchange pools, there's a certain amount of money sitting there for you to trade in and out of. And the lower that is, the higher risk, you know, the lower that is relative to the market cap, the higher risk that is. Whereas in the traditional financial markets, you're pretty much guaranteed that if you want to trade in and trade out of something, that settlement is going to happen, right? Behind the network, the financial network. Here in DeFi, that's not always a guarantee. And that's why you see a lot of times these tokens, they don't only get rug pulled from the inside, they get rug pulled from the community and from the outside, because of the way, you know, and I've even seen some of these, to get these market caps higher, they'll, you know, they'll employ elaborate schemes. So essentially, one of the schemes that I've seen some tokens do is they'll put in all the tokens, they'll into the liquidity pool, they'll start getting sales and sales and sales, and then they'll pull out 80% of the tokens that are left in the liquidity pool with the money that's tied to it. And then they'll buy back tokens with the money that they took out, effectively, you know, when you take out the liquidity pool, there's less available tokens. So every dollar that's put back in has an exponential effect on the market cap. And so they do this several times. They do this 5, 6, 7 times. And then that's how you have a really low liquidity position with a really high market cap. And that's how they're getting, you know, they're essentially manipulating systems to get people excited to jump into these tokens. It's kind of dangerous. So keep an eye out for those things in this, in this market.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's some of the tokenomics, you need a degree to understand some of the stuff that's going on. I mean, there's some really simple ones out there. You know, I mean, I must admit, I'm quite a big fan of Reflection. I like Reflection. Mark, I'm sure you're aware that Reflection's like a, you know, if you bought 100 tokens and Reflection was 3%, you know, 3% of the tokens would get reflected back to the existing holders pro rata. So I like Reflection, and I quite like a deflationary token as well, but that's just my personal choice. There's so many different variations, and every time you look at a new token coming on and you look at the tokenomics, you're like, well, that's new, that's different. But it's probably the same thing, just dressed up differently. You know, there's probably a core 4 or 5 things that go on, but there's so many ways to tell the story. But no, there is some decent stuff out there. It's just finding the one that you're comfortable with, and obviously you're not overstretching the mark with what you put in.
Making sure you do your due diligence, which is the same really as investing in the stock market. I mean, you know, my point of investing would be, again, you look at the directors, you look at the projects they've got, make sure it's legit, make sure they've got a plan to monetize it, and you have to obviously buy into the story as well, you know, whatever that might be.
It's a bit hard in the crypto world to do that, but there is, as John said, you know, there's certain things you can look for, like, you know, trusted docs team audits, etc. You know, some people want the contract renounced as well, you know, and that way nobody can fiddle with the contract in theory. But some tokens don't want to renounce the contract because they want to future proof the token. So it's complicated, and I've found that every day is a school day, and people keep saying to me, oh, you know lots and lots about crypto. I'm no bugger all in the grand scheme of things, you know. I'm still this kindergarten child trying to feel my way around. But probably compared to my family and most of my friends, I'm streets ahead, you know.
I think most of us are still trying to feel our way around though as well. It's still early days, isn't it?
yeah. But that's half the fun.
It's half the fun. Exactly.
Yeah. And I always like to prove people wrong as well. I mean, we'll not mention any names, Mark, but there's a good friend of ours that told me that crypto was absolute rubbish. We never make any money, blah, blah, blah. And lo and behold, that guy's now sitting with a portfolio of, you know, a reasonable sum of money for doing next to nothing. We won't mention his name, but he knows who he is.
Dude, I'm gonna announce some breaking news right here, right now. Did you guys just see what happened with the markets? They just took like a 20%, 10% dump.
I was going to finish the podcast on that. Yeah, I've got it all on my screen. Yeah.
Sorry. That's breaking news.
It is breaking news live on the podcast. That's why I was going to finish. Yeah, I was going to just wrap it up. Thank you very much for your time. But really, just to finish on, you've been around since 2010 in this market. What do you think of this now?
I think it's just what I was saying, more of the manipulation, you know, these people getting together. When I start to see like FUD news come out, when I saw the NFL news come out and the IMF news come out this past week, typically after a long weekend like this, when you see FUD news like that, there's some moves that are coming. So this wasn't entirely, I can tell you that coming down to the point that it's coming down to now is probably where I thought it would end, but it came down pretty fast. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see how much more it falls. But when I see big industries taking a negative stance on it together within a few days, that to me is, you know, somewhat, you got to look at the owners of these like things like NFL football teams, specifically NFL football teams. You've got some of the wealthiest people in the world, like Jerry Jones and the Kraft, you know, the Heinz Kraft people. You know, they don't make these moves without talking to each other, and they don't make these moves without talking to other big financial institutions. And when I see a lot of FUD, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt being pushed out there by a bunch of institutions at the same time, I kind of look to expect these types of moves shortly after.
Yeah, and you can almost guarantee it's going to happen on the day that El Salvador adopted it as well.
Right. Well, what better way to say, put a middle finger in their face and say, don't ever do it again.
Exactly. Yeah. So there we go. The narrative strikes again. but globally, though, it doesn't concern you, I guess.
No, I mean, I've seen this play out so many times in the last, and quick, you know, it's played out quick. There's been more adoption and more movement into these financial markets than any other market system in the history of the world this fast. So I've seen it, you know, I've seen it go from Bitcoin, go from $10,000 to $1,000, you know, or, you know, and think of the X there. That's that's a much bigger X than 60 to 35 or 60 to 30. So, you know, I've seen it. I've been around in the emotional side of it through those ups and downs. And the one thing that I know is that we've only scratched the surface of the onboarding of the retail and the everyday person. And that's what excites me about crypto in general.
Indeed. Exactly. Okay. Well, on that note, then I think we can wrap this podcast up. It's nearly just under 50 minutes, so almost an hour. That's a good first one. We covered quite a lot of different topics there. Maybe in future ones we can hone in on certain topics. I think you can have a whole podcast or a series of podcasts even on NFTs and that burgeoning marketplace. But listen, John, thank you very much for your time. I'm sure at some point as well we will talk about Bank Social and what you guys are working on there. But for now, thank you very much, and I will speak to you again soon, hopefully.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on, guys. We'll see you guys very, very soon, I hope, and you know, continue these conversations. Thank you so much.
Great stuff. Thanks, John.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Ben and Russell. Tune in next time.